Joining us now, we have the tournament director of the Shell Houston Open, Steve Timms, joins us. Steve, welcome into the golf shop.
Well, thank you. Great to be with you.
All right, so right out of the box, I want to ask you, what makes this such a great tournament to lead up to the first major of the year next week? So kind of give me a feel for, I mean, obviously, it's the last chance for somebody to get in if they're not in the Masters and they win, but tell me about the golf course, the setup. What makes it such a great lead into the Masters?
Sure. Well, we were first given the date by the tour of the week prior to Augusta in 2007. We learned about it really in a 2006 event right after that. And during the 2006 event, we were kind of thinking about what we could do to create some uniqueness around the golf course. And we came up with this idea of preparing the golf course basically to try to emulate the conditions that Augusta National players are going to see the next week. So we are overseeded this time of year. So our superintendent at the time went over and visited with some folks at Augusta National during that summer. And we came up with this plan of, you know, how we would mow the golf course out. So light rough, you know, inch and a quarter rough, all the fairways are mowed from the green back to the tee like they do at Augusta National. We have a lot of runoff areas around the greens that are closely mown where you get those really tight lies for chipping. And then we have a lot of greenside water hazards and that have steep banks on them. So we mowed those banks down at basically fairway height. So, you know, we've all seen those iconic pictures of the ball trickling, you know, spinning back off of 15 green at Augusta and into the hazard there. And, you know, just kind of creating that same feel versus an overseeded golf course with just really heavy rough that we've seen a lot of through the years.
Yeah, I mean, that's a brilliant idea. It'll certainly attract people who want to get a little preview. And I'm curious if the agronomy guys at Augusta, I mean, were they willing to share some of their state secrets, or was this all done surreptitiously?
No, they were willing to collaborate and share. I mean, they don't share everything, obviously, and we understand that. But really, we're willing to work with our guys on, you know, just kind of height of cut and different things like that. And you know, we're at sea level here in Houston. We don't have all the elevation change that they have at Augusta National, which obviously makes it very unique. But just from a preparation perspective, they were willing to share that. And the tour agronomist at the time was a gentleman named Tom Brown, who has retired, but I think he's one of the best in the business in dealing with overseeded golf courses. And he really taught our guys a lot of how to maintain firmness, how to control fertility on the greens, and, you know, so that we're able to really maximize our green speeds, which is part of the whole allure of the thing, because our greens are big, but they're compartmentalized and have a lot of movement in them. And we've always, you know, through the years, all of us, you know, watching Augusta the way we have watching the Masters tournament, it's about hitting it in the right portion of the green, right? And so we have a lot of those things, and with really quick green speeds, it plays into that.
Yeah, you know, and being before major, obviously there's good and there's bad. I mean, how'd you guys feel about getting that date? Because we all know that some players like to play the week before and others don't. So there's tends to be, you know, it's a great field, but there's always guys that are going to be missing because they don't want to play the week before the Masters.
Sure. Yeah, we knew there was going to be some ebb and flow in that. And in fact, the first year in 2007, Phil Mickelson, who is, you know, historically played the week prior to the Masters. In fact, a lot of people remember he won by a ton at Atlanta and then won his first Masters the next week. So he's always kind of played his way into the majors. But in 2007, he didn't play us, but we had an opportunity for, you know, to show how we were going to prepare the golf course and able to talk to him about it. And he heard from some other players, and he's played ever since 2008. And so, you know, word of mouth, but, you know, you're going to miss some guys, and you're going to have some guys that play that, you know, don't play particularly well the next week after taking the week off and decide to add us. I mean, we're picking up a couple of guys this year You know, one of them in particular, Justin Rose, who his highest Masters finish was 2 years ago when he played us the week before. And he said, you know, in publicly that he's, you know, he really feels like he needs to treat the week, you know, have some continuity in his preparation, not just go over there and play Augusta, you know, like crazy the week before. So you're going to get some and you're going to, you know, not get others.
Well, we're excited to be on the phone with Steve Timms, the tournament director of the Shell Houston Open, being played down at the Golf Club of Houston this week. And I'm looking at your recent champions list, and I'm trying to find some commonality between these players. Jim Herman, J.B. Holmes, Matt Jones, D.A. Points, who just won this weekend, Hunter Mahan, and then go back to Phil Mickelson in 2011. What kind of player are you seeing right now has the kind of game or is playing right now the way they will need to be successful in this event?
Well, you know, we have a lot. There's a lot of variety in the golf course. So, you know, short game is always key at any PGA Tour event. You know, we've got some length, but we also have some short holes that where you've got scoring opportunities. Our 12th hole is a drivable par 3. Most of our par 5s, you know, a lot of the field can get there. But, you know, JB won, I think he shot 65 in the last round to get in the playoff. He came from way back. So, you know, it's not necessarily a bomber's golf course. It's more of a really strategic golf course. We have a lot of water, so there's a premium on driving accuracy, which, you know, you would think with light rough at an inch and a quarter, that wouldn't be such a premium. But we do have a lot of hazards, water hazards that, you know, come into play off the tee.
Well, yeah, and I'm looking at this, your playoff record here. You've had 5 playoff finishes in the last decade, including a couple of them required a 3-way playoff. What is it about this course coming down the stretch that it keeps it so tight? And then I'm also curious, when you play it, where does it go? Does it go to the 18 with that water up the left-hand side, or where do you go to play the playoff?
Right, the 18th hole runs parallel to the first hole, so we'll play 18, 18, and then go to 1 if needed, if we go to a third hole and then back to 18. So they're right there together. Yeah, you know, so our finish is pretty interesting because you start with the back 9 with that 12th hole, which is drivable, which is typically a scoring opportunity, par 5 next, and then a pretty lengthy par 3, and then another reachable par 5, and then our finishing holes are very, very strong with a par 3 and then 2 really strong par 4s. So there's typically a lot of movement there right at the end that has produced all these playoffs.
Yeah, so when we start talking about holes out there, and we always want to find out where people are going to be making the moves, obviously there's a chance to back up at the end. From a standpoint of your favorite hole to watch, if you had to go out there, or your favorite location, if you're going to go out there and watch as a spectator, where are you going? Where are you going to watch things happen or maybe things fall apart for some players?
Well, on the front 9, we have a stretch where we set up some open-to-the-public bleachers, and there's great viewing. On the 7th tee, we have one of the back tees that we don't use, and it's right close to the 6th green. And then you can get right over to the 8th, and also over to the 3rd hole. And it's a great little run there. We got a couple beautiful lakes there. It's really a pretty place. But our 16th hole is a par 3 that we have some great open to the public viewing. And it's a very lively atmosphere. So it's a good spot as well to kind of watch them come through as they're finishing up.
Well, and for those of us who will be watching on TV who like a little carnage, I mean, there's water on 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It's probably not in play. 8, more water on 10 and 11, and then, of course, 18. What of those holes might we see some guys dunk it?
Well, 18 gets a lot of balls in the water. We call it the big ball washer. So it gets a lot of balls in the water, and especially if we've got firm conditions because the wind's kind of off or down from the off the right. So, you know, if the ball gets moving left at all, it's it's getting in the hazard in most cases. So that one gets a lot. The fifth hole is a really strong par four, and with water all the way down the left and from the back tee, it is a very demanding driving hole. And there are a lot of balls that get over there too. So I'd say those are probably the two that are that get the most action.
All right, knowing the conditions that you're going to have this week, the thing that I can't get out of my head right now is I'm looking at the score to par the last 5 years. 15, 16, 15, 16, 16. I'm guessing that 15 or 16 is the magic number, isn't it?
Yeah, it sounds like it is. So, you know, springtime in Houston, we get some wind here in Texas. And so, you know, that certainly has an effect. But yeah, it seems like that's the number. So, you know, the guys tee it up and they're thinking that's probably where I need to get.
Well, Mickelson got to 20 back in 2011. So if you were minus 20 and there were, you know, you were a few groups back, would you be willing to go sip a few beers feeling pretty safe?
I think you'd feel pretty good. He had an amazing final round that year, and it was pretty electric.
Yeah. So when you start talking about, you know, the numbers and things like that, we see guys, you know, we see constantly, like it almost every week, there's like a 59 watch, a 60 watch, a 61 watch. What number? What's the course record out there, number one? And what's the number? I mean, if somebody went really low, can they get down to 59 or 60 in this golf course?
Well, our course record's 63. Mm. We have three players, I believe, three that hold that. Johnson Wagner, Jimmy Walker, and Adam Scott. So, you know, that's as low as it's gotten. Yeah, I don't know. These guys are so unbelievably good anymore. I mean, you know, what is 58 the old 59, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the talent is unbelievable. So, I don't know. We'll see. Might be one out there.
So would it take the perfect storm to shoot, you know, to break that course record, to shoot a 62 or a 61? I mean, a little bit of moisture falls and you know, in the morning, let's say, and the first group's out, get no wind, maybe get some warm temperatures. I mean, it just needs to be the perfect storm, and somebody may shoot 62, but it would obviously have to be an unbelievable round in absolutely perfect conditions.
Yeah, well, one thing about it is our greens are absolutely perfect. And so if we do get some moisture and they get a little bit softer, you know, with the way they roll, it is, you know, you can make a lot of putts when you get to rolling it. And these guys obviously can. So it would take that, you know, one of those, you know, early rounds where you've got still conditions and you're just, you know, rolling it so good, you know, that could certainly be, you know, the perfect storm, as you say.
All right. Well, Steve, man, we appreciate you coming on with us. We look forward to a great tournament week out of you guys and rolling right into the Masters.
You bet. Great. Thanks for having me.